the statistics are out there. People are using social media. I think social media penetration now is upward of 77% of Americans 12 and older are using social media on a regular basis. Mm. And that's not just young people. That's 12 and older. That's everybody, right?
Right.
So your audience is going to be on social media.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome back to the Disruption Zone. We intend to disrupt you today in the best way we know how. I thought we would bring on one of the funniest people that I know and one of the most expert people in social media, because businesses... I'm not sure a lot of businesses understand how to do social media, Cameron. I mean, it seems like they're always stepping in it.
I don't think, I think he'll probably tell us, but I think a lot of them aren't even aware of how important it is. And they halfway get into it knowing it's a thing, but right. They don't get into it very expertly.
Yeah, right on. So let's bring in Jason Falls. He is not just a social media guru. He's a well-known business thinker and author. He has been around the world entertaining and enlightening people on the issue of social media exploration. What's going on, dude? How are you?
Thanks, Mom.
The problem is, he's all
your mom things. Actually emailed me that bio, by the way. She said, make sure you say this.
Mom, did your mom write your bio, too?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did. Jason Falls, social media guru. What's going on, dude? How are you? It's good to see you.
It's good. I'm doing really well.
Tell me, first of all, let's talk a little bit about how you got into this, because you literally have been on seven continents sharing business.
Not seven.
I thought it was seven.
Seven, no. Is all of them. What have you done in Antarctica? Seven.
Nobody wants to hear about social media on Antarctica.
Yeah.
I think I've been on four.
Four continents.
You've
okay.
Been on four.
Yeah. But around the world.
Yeah.
And you've talked about social media with businesses. What do you think is the biggest pitfall that people are facing?
Well, I mean, from a business standpoint, the biggest pitfall, as you guys were talking about earlier, is that businesses don't take it seriously. Yeah. They say, well, we've got an intern to do it. And it's like,
that just sounds so
wow, okay, that's great. Since, the majority of the people, when there's the thing about social media now is when your customers have a problem, the first place they go now is to your Twitter account or your Facebook page.
That's a great point.
And so if you have a disgruntled customer, do you want them to talk to an intern first?
Good point.
Yeah.
That's not no.
No, you don't.
And so they're not calling you anymore. Nobody's going to pick up the phone and call you. They're not necessarily going to come into your store. They're going to try to reach out to you on social media. So at least from a customer service standpoint.
And the problem is when you have a customer who has 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 followers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That customer no longer is, like you said, just calling you on the phone. They're calling you while they're talking to all of their friends on speakerphone.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
Yeah. If they are posting it publicly on Twitter or on their Facebook page, as opposed to coming to your Facebook page, all of their friends and followers can see it.
Which is fascinating, because I've seen specifically with airlines and Twitter, like if there is a delayed flight, I had a friend not long ago who was basically, honestly, I felt like he was being just a bit of a whiner, but nonetheless, he was complaining to their social media account. Now, they were interacting with him, and they tried to keep getting him to go DM, and he wouldn't. He said, no, let's keep this out for everybody to see. And I thought, you know what, it's kind of... I don't know.
I'll say it. It's a dick move.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of. Thank you. That's what I wanted to say. As much as like that, I understand it, because he is frustrated.
Yeah.
He is angry, and he knows the moment this goes private, who knows, am I going to get someone who's now being dickish back?
Right.
Or am I going to go someone who's now, okay, now if I keep it out in the public, then now I know I'm going to get someone who's kind,
right.
Someone who's willing to help me along the way.
Right. Yeah. And the honest truth is that customers who do that are, they're playing the dick card. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we are being selfish. We're being egotistical. We're being narcissistic. That's the door that social media opens for customers in that situation.
That's all social media is narcissism.
It really is.
That's all it is.
But at the same time, from a business perspective, you have to embrace that. You have to understand it, because that's what customers are doing.
Okay. So question then, along those lines, is that like is a good example of embracing that narcissism Burger King, or I'm sorry, Wendy's?
Yes,
the way that Wendy's is basically owning Twitter they're going straight at their competition, tweeting at McDonald's, tweeting at Burger King, etc. And I think people appreciate that in the social media world, because that narcissism thrives there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the snarky responses and whatnot, from going after the competition resonates with a certain audience. Now, in my personal opinion, for Wendy's, it's not what they, in the marketing business, it's not on brand. It's not how they communicate in other channels. But in social media, it's playing well and it works. And so the people are responding to it. I think it would work better for Taco Bell, but Taco Bell does it a little bit, but not the same way.
Yeah.
However, what you don't see a lot of brands doing, Wendy's is starting to do, and there's actually a really good case study right now with Moon Pie that's doing it, where when people are complaining, when they're doing customer service complaints, the brands are actually responding with that same kind of snark.
Yeah.
Because there's actually a really interesting, there was an article in Fast Company, I think this last week, where they were profiling the social media manager for, which is an agency in Knoxville that does Moon Pie, and someone had said, had tweeted to Moon Pie and said, something like, you should call yourself Moon Buy because nobody wants to buy you.
That's stupid.
And the person's name was like Kayla, and it was Kaela. And Moon Pie responded, well, you should call yourself Kayla because that's how you spell it. Right? So it's like now some of the brands are taking a little bit more risk and having a little bit more fun with it because they realize that it's playful and fun without they're not being disrespectful.
Right.
They're having some fun with it. The challenge though for a brand and a business is you can't cross the line.
Yeah.
So you don't want to hurt someone's feelings. You don't want to be disrespectful.
And when you're being sarcastic, number one, that's the game you play all the time is that you know you're joking, you know it's all in fun, but does the listener, and that's the big part because communication is 90% what the perception is.
That's true, because if someone were new to Twitter, and let's say it was maybe someone a little bit more conservative, someone a little bit older, and they see Wendy's or Moon Pie or some other brand that has a history of being snarky, but this person's new to them, and they see something like that, they could be completely offended.
Yeah.
So you have to be really careful, and you have to sort of put that social proof out there and be consistent with how you behave. That way there's sort of proof in case anybody ever questions it.
But going back to what you said earlier, though, Wendy's, Moon Pie, they probably have an actual dedicated marketing professional that's handling that. That's not an intern.
Yeah, I mean, Moon Pie is not a very big brand in the grand scheme of things, but they do have an agency that actually does that for them.
What did you guys think of, all right, so Carl's Jr., which is a West Coast burger joint. I think they're related to Hardee's here.
Yeah,
they are. But they did a thing where they were trying to get some, with Steven Spielberg's new movie that just came out, Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Spielberg has publicly said that he likes those little sliders that Carl's Jr. makes, and so they were wanting to call them Spielburgers. Mm-hmm. So they put on Twitter, they were like, hey, we're going to call them Spielburgers and honor him. We haven't asked him, but we figure he's okay with it. He went on Twitter and responded and said, I like those burgers, but no thanks.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that move? Because
it backfire.
Yeah.
Did it?
I don't know.
Because Carl's Jr. we're sitting here talking about it.
Well, you're talking about it, Leland.
But it's
in the news. That's how I found out about it.
But I mean, for Carl's Jr., I think it was a good, sort of social media PR move. They did get people talking about him. It was, kind of newsworthy and noteworthy. Spielberg, rather.
It worked. There you go.
Spielberg did respond, which is good. And he responded publicly without just privately doing a cease and desist or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And it was actually interesting because they got publicity without having to cross that line and get a cease and desist.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, the Carl's Jr. attorneys are like, okay, we can't do it.
Right.
Right. So they didn't, they took a little bit of a risk, but a calculated one.
Right.
So that's another area where social media can be a proof point for you, where you can sort of tow your water into a risky area without getting in too much trouble.
Right.
So that's kind of an isolated incident. I don't know that would work in a lot of different cases for people,
right.
But I thought that was a pretty smart move on Carl's Jr.'s part.
So is part of it deciding what's your social media personality is going to be, is basically evaluating who and what you are.
Yeah, and it's not just a social media thing. Let me pull back. I mean, even if you're a small business, what you have to decide before you ever think about social media is, who am I? What's my brand? Who am I going after? And then when you decide who your target audience is, what it is you sell, what promise it is you're making to the marketplace, now how are you going to deliver that promise? How are you going to talk to the marketplace? What promise are you delivering, and how are you going to talk to people? And then extending from that, how are you going to communicate? What channels are you going to communicate? How are you going to reach your audience? Social media is probably going to be an extension of that, because the statistics are out there. People are using social media. I think social media penetration now is upward of 77% of Americans 12 and older are using social media on a regular basis. Mm. And that's not just young people. That's 12 and older. That's everybody, right?
Right.
So your audience is going to be on social media. It's a matter of figuring out where and getting granular on what networks they're using and whatnot, based on your demographic. But figuring out where they are and what parts of social media are going to make sense for you, and then also combining that with a good advertising strategy and a website and maybe mobile and maybe email and all of the different, you know, radio and podcasting and all the different channels that you can use to reach people with your message, and then figuring out how to talk to them in each of those channels so that your message resonates and you can reach them.
Is there, again, back to who you are and what you do as an entity and who you're trying to reach, is there a better social media platform for a certain demographic, or is it just across the board? You need to be on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I don't even know if Google Plus is still a thing.
It's not really. Okay. So I would say that there, I don't know that I would ever recommend that a brand be on everything.
Okay.
Because I don't think that everything ever makes sense. You have to really understand where your audience is and where they're playing. Now, there are going to be brands that try to reach a broad audience. Like, for instance, Amazon tries to reach everywhere,
right,
everybody. So maybe they need to have some strategy everywhere. But at the same time, what it is really understanding who your audience is and where they play. And so your audience is maybe they play more often on Facebook. Facebook is probably appealing more to the probably 30 and older demographic now. In fact, the faster growing audiences on Facebook are actually in the 50 and older crowd, which surprises a lot of people. But people go to Facebook for two reasons. If you're over the age of 40, 45.
Mammals on Facebook.
You get, what's that?
Mammals on Facebook.
There you go. Well, the mammals on Facebook to see pictures of her kids or her grandkids.
Right, yeah.
If you're under the age of 40, you're on Facebook to stalk your ex.
Yep.
So that's why you're there.
This is so true.
If you're under the age of 30, you're probably more tending to use Instagram. Mm-hmm. Which is owned by Facebook, so there's going to be some cross-pollination there. Snapchat is still growing. I personally don't like it, but I'm also 45 years old, so
right,
you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense for me individually, but I have to be there to understand it.
Right.
And then there's some new ones that are starting to emerge, like WeChat and whatnot, that are starting to become relevant, but they're still small.
Yeah, I want to get into, like, what are the up-and-coming social media platforms?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Facebook took a gigantic hit, it seems like, in the last 2 weeks.
So they took a reputation hit, but you got, and they did take a little bit of a hit in usage in the last year. In fact, the usage research that comes out every year from Edison, which is the one, what I consider the most reliable national social media usage research. And so this year was the first year that Facebook usage dropped in the history of Facebook.
Okay.
So it went from 67% of people using Facebook regularly to 64% of people using Facebook regularly. So it dropped for the first time. But that's still 2/3 of people in America are using Facebook regularly.
Right.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, but
that's more than television. So that's a lot. And so that's a lot of people. But Facebook took a reputation hit with this Cambridge Analytica thing. But what you have to understand is that Cambridge Analytica story with user data being used and manipulated is the end result of a bigger media problem. And the bigger media problem is a human problem. And that is that we are a train wreck society. We mm-hmm. want to stop and look at the next biggest train wreck.
Yeah.
Okay. And so all of the different media outlets, whether it's podcasts or magazines or cable news channels, are just trying to create the next great train wreck headline so that we'll stop and pay attention to them,
right,
because their job is to generate eyeballs, which generate advertising dollars. Mm. So the people that have the eyeballs are going to try to sell and manipulate them so that they can, you know, they can make more money. And so that's just an end result.
Well, and isn't it, we're all lying to ourselves if we don't think that in some form or another, every social media platform is doing the exact same thing Facebook was doing, because the whole point of social media, the profit model, I mean, do we think that these organizations just benevolently decided to give us all a free speech platform?
Right.
Nah. I mean, they're all marketing us.
They did at the beginning.
Yeah,
not anymore.
Right. Yeah. And the one of the drawbacks of capitalism is that the people that create something that everybody wants to flock to are in it to make a buck.
Right.
And they're in it to make as many bucks as they can. And so if they have user data, they will sell it
right
to the highest bidder for whatever the hell reason.
Is that the monetary model for them? I mean, you can sell that data, but like Facebook, for example, I buy Facebook ads from time to time mm-hmm. across my various things, whether it's my radio show, whether it's my ministry, because it gets me more likes. Mm-hmm. More likes turns into more opportunities to speak ministry, more listeners for radio. What other models are there for them to make money other than just selling those personal? I mean, I know they sell the massive ads sure. to the big companies, but to the little people like me, what else is there?
Right. Well, so they sell ads to small businesses. They sell ads to big businesses. They also sell services to big businesses. So the social media software companies that the big businesses use, they pay Facebook for access to bandwidth to be able to use more of the data. Not from a, you know, I want to, you know, manipulate individual user data, but basically I want to be able to target people with my advertising on a larger scale. And so they do that. But Facebook also has all that user data there that they can say, hey, we can package it a bunch of different ways and sell it to the government or sell it to, you know, Russia or sell it to whatever. Yeah. And so right now we're probably getting ready to go into a cycle where the government and several other organizations are going to start looking at Facebook and other social networks and saying, wait a minute, how are you using this?
How are you using this stuff we're buying from you?
We're not sure if we like this.
Right.
So,
unless we're using it.
By the way, I take exception to the idea that people use Facebook to stalk exes. I use it to check on them, make sure they're okay. I'm concerned. I'm worried about it.
Concerned about
well,
how they
you know,
feel.
With someone who has so many.
Yes.
I can understand. Especially someone with a ministry.
Yes.
It's brought out the knives.
I was talking earlier about dyeing your skin.
No, not skin.
Replacing facial your hair.
Facial hair.
I love it. All right, let's talk
we
about
can get out the spray tan.
No.
Whoa.
I did go to a tanning bed about 2 weeks before my senior year picture at UK, but that was just so I looked a little glowy.
Isn't spray tan one of the things that they recommend evangelists buy?
No, that's not a thing at all. No. No, evangelists are supposed to have slick back hair, golden rings, gold chains, four-piece suits,
hair gel.
Yeah, no. look at you two with your great heads of hair. Well done. Good for you all.
Man, let's talk about political mistakes then. We've talked about the companies that have geniusly waded into taking some risks, not necessarily politically.
Sure.
But there have been major corporations who've decided to take sides in major social issues that are facing our country right now. And let me just throw this out there and see if you agree with it as somebody who works in this world. But the way I would look at it is, if I'm a brand that's trying to reach everybody in the country, I'm going to stay as far away from social issues as I possibly can.
Sure.
Now, if I'm a brand that specifically caters to a specific group of people, if I'm a brand that that specifically caters to gun owners, I might take a stand on the Second Amendment. But if I'm not a brand that specifically caters to them, I'm probably going to stay as far away from that. I might have my own policy in the company store, but I'm not going to say much about it.
Right.
Is that really the way companies ought to go about it? I mean, because do they realize the risk they're taking sometimes?
So the business consultant in me would agree with you and say, you know, you've got to be as middle of the road as possible because you don't want to upset one side or the other. But let's pull back. And we were talking a minute ago about how, you know, the people that run these social networks, you know, are they, you know, being, you know, just, you know, good arbiters of that user data. Well, if I own a business and I see an opportunity to make the world a better place by using the money and the leverage and the influence of my business to impact a social issue, if I feel like strongly enough about doing that, then that's a risk that I might want to take. So
as long as you understand that there's a large portion of your audience who may not think what you think makes the world a better place actually does.
Absolutely. And we were talking, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about, you know, Chick-fil-A a few years ago, the executive who came out and said something derogatory about the LGBT community, and they protested and whatnot. And the Chick-fil-A, you know, board or whatever said, well, you know, we're a family, you know, Southern thing, and yeah, we don't care. We're right, not going to respond to you, and we just don't care. And so the, you know, a lot of the more conservative folks rallied around Chick-fil-A and had Chick-fil-A days and so on and so forth. And then the LGBT supporters and community, you know, protested and boycotted.
And then
so,
snuck and bought the really great chicken sandwich.
Probably. You know, you had
this, it is chicken.
You had this polarization for right, a couple of months, and then the issue died right, down.
Because
right?
The next thing came up.
Because the next thing
the
came
next
up.
Thing, yeah. Okay. Like you said, we're a train wreck society. It's just yeah, whatever the next protest is, whatever the next right, controversy is, whatever right, the next problem is.
But what you're saying, though, is what Chick-fil-A did is kind of a carbon stamp for it, right or left.
Right.
If you're okay with the risk,
yeah,
stick with
own it.
Yeah, own it.
And it will blow over.
Yes.
Probably.
Is what you're saying.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Because everybody forgot, like Target. Listen. Target did the thing like, oh, anybody yeah, can use whichever restroom.
Right.
And, of course, you know, I come out and I'm like, I don't go to Target to pee.
Right.
I go to Target to buy the good deals.
Leland.
Right. Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm just...
But you really should. Their bathrooms are...
Their bathrooms are amazing.
You know what I do?
Right.
And this won't surprise you. It might surprise
you. You go to Target to pee?
The big red balls out in front, that's where I pee.
That's a great place, too.
That's
but you understand, like, that everybody got all upset about that right, for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Let me say, Adam Carolla, to me, is kind of a personal hero just because his podcast is so enormous. Mm-hmm. And he's one of these, he says things because he says
are you going to tweet this at Adam Carolla when we're done?
Just see if we can get on. because he has what he calls his pirate ship, right? It's like, I guess in some sense it's this podcast. We don't have advertisers yet. We don't have, you know, we only owe this to you and I, to right, Leland and I. And if one of us steps out of line and someone has a problem with what we say, well, we just decide, okay, whether we want to backtrack or whether we want to say what, like Chick-fil-A said, well, we don't care. What Adam Carolla does is he will say very, compared to what most people do on FCC stuff, mm-hmm, television, radio, you know, he will say some pretty seemingly offensive things, and I get all upset at the idea of offense anyway. We are a far too offended
yeah,
society.
I agree.
But he'll say something, and he just won't care. Someone will come at him, he'll like, get a life.
Yeah,
I don't care. Yeah. And it blows away. No, it never seems to come back to hurt him, and it seems to me it's because of his attitude of, I don't care what you think.
Right.
This is me. Yeah. Accept me or don't. Listen or don't. I'm not going to apologize for what I say.
Right. And he's a comedian, and that's the comedy world. That's sort of, you know, the standard operating procedure.
Right.
You know, you're going to offend somebody.
That's the whole
with
point.
Everything you say. And so you just kind of let it roll off your back. If the business world took that approach
yeah,
and realized, hey, we're allowed to take a stand
yeah,
and it's okay to be polarizing
yeah,
and it's okay to, I had a business, you know, colleague of mine once upon a time who said that the world is not an end sum game. You don't have to, in order to be successful, you don't have to have everybody
yeah,
buy
right,
from you.
Right.
You only have to have enough people buy from you to make enough money to be able to pay for your employees and your bills and be profitable and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so for most people, that's a very small piece of the pie.
And look at that. That's Apple's model.
Yeah.
Apple does not have anywhere close to the market share that PCs have, yet they're enormous.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, and they do it, though, this is a great example that you bring up, Cameron, because just this week, Apple responded to Facebook and took a stand, which is rare in the tech world, mm-hmm, and Steve Cook's out there going, hey, guess what? Y'all are not our product.
Yeah.
He didn't say it that way because he's from Silicon Valley and I'm from Kentucky, but he said, you guys are not our product.
Yeah, right.
You're our customer, okay? And Facebook really doesn't have a way to come back at that
yeah,
because there is nothing in their model that doesn't allow for us to be their product. So he's taking a stand,
right,
but he's, to your point, Cameron, they have a niche audience. They have a group of, I'm a huge Apple fan because yeah, their privacy and their closed source.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to buy new.
And it just works.
Well, it works. Yeah. I would have to buy a new PC every year.
I've got,
versus not the Apple products that last 5-6
not to
years,
turn this into an Apple advertisement, but
we're going to tweet this at Apple too.
And I listen, I've got a MacBook Pro I've had for 5 years. It
yeah,
is as blazing now as it was 5 years ago.
It's crazy. But there, to your point, again, come back. Mm-hmm. Apple obviously doesn't share my politics.
No.
And yet it has raving fans in, say, the most right wing of all radio talk
yep,
show hosts, Rush Limbaugh is practically a 3-hour commercial for them when they have a new product come out.
Yeah. Which is shocking to most people.
Yeah, but again, but the product is good. The product is so good. And that's the thing, is if it's like the Chick-fil-A sandwich.
It's good.
If you can make it so good, people are going to say, they'll take a stand, and then they'll sneak and get one because they ultimately want what they want.
Well, and what's funny is when I'm sitting talking to people about how good social media.
Yeah.
I say, look, the best social media is having an insatiable product.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have an insatiable product, you don't need social media strategy.
Right.
Apple doesn't really do social media at all.
No.
They don't have to.
Sure.
They don't have to have forums. They don't have to have blogs. They don't have to have Twitter. They don't have to have any of that crap because their fans talk about them positively all the
time. People drive around with Apple stickers on their back window.
I'm their shill.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, people drive around with, they have their stick figure family on one side of their SUV and their Apple sticker on the other. No one has a PC sticker on their car.
Stick figure family company.
When a business owner comes to me and says, okay, I think social media is the solution to solving this, and this for me, I normally say, well, okay, you're paying me to tell me what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Right.
And so what you need to hear is social media is not going to solve your problem.
Right.
What you need to do is solve the problem.
Yeah.
And social media can help, you know, let people know the problem is solved.
Yeah.
It's a communications channel. It's not going to solve the problem.
Right.
You've got either a product issue or a service issue or a channel issue or a service line issue, something.
It seems to me one of the biggest mistakes a company can make, an entity can make. I mean, as someone who starts off with a blog or starts off with a podcast or someone that just, you know, to get the word out there, it's got to be social media. There can be this attitude of growing too fast, too quickly, mm-hmm. to the point where, hey, you're not ready for, because the more people that know about what you're doing now, the more people are going to know you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. It happens time and time again.
So again, fix the problem.
Yep.
Then let's tell everyone the problem's fixed.
Rabbit
or you've
trail.
You've got a better product.
Rabbit trail. You don't like stick figure family stickers on people's
I don't car? Get the point of it. I like the stick figure dog.
Have you seen the one with the Tyrannosaurus Rex eating the stick figure?
Yeah, see, family? I don't know. What is that?
That's
what is
the
that
best
communicating
one
to us in 2018?
I don't know, but I love it.
I just favorite. Like the ones that you know, my golden retriever is smarter than your
honor student.
Yeah. Okay, what about this, Leland? I don't know if you want to go here or not, but I wanted to ask you this, Jace.
It's your podcast too.
I know it is. But how do you grow? Like, let's talk different forms of social media. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
All right.
If I'm an entity, all right, and I'm, let's just go. I mean, Leland and I just started this podcast.
Yeah. Okay. We brought you in here.
Yeah. This is
so we could get free advice.
Free consultation.
This is free advice.
This is the pick your brain episode.
Yeah. That's how do we become better now? How do you grow? Let's take Instagram. Instagram to me is I cannot grow Instagram to save my life.
Me neither.
Twitter was
driving me nuts.
I added 500 followers this March on Twitter. Now, granted, a lot of that has to do with March Madness, my association with Kentucky basketball, and me just being opinionated about things dealing with March Madness. So I added 500 followers.
Sure.
Instagram, no.
Hold on.
How do you do that?
This is the thing, though. Okay, I can add Twitter followers by saying something stupid in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I can get 20 Twitter followers right now.
Because they want they want to hear your stupidity,
right?
Though, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You can't do that on Instagram, which is part of the beauty of it.
Yeah.
You just put a picture of the last meal you ate.
That's why.
But that doesn't grow it.
You grow it through hashtag.
That's all you do. Your Instagram is nothing but your meal.
I know. You grow it through hashtag.
That's why more and more people are flocking to Instagram. It's because it is much more of a pure social network that, you know, there's not as much gaming of the system.
Yeah.
There's not as much fake accounts.
Which, ironically, it comes from Facebook. I don't
know. It is ironic.
Well, it didn't come from that. Did Facebook buy it?
They bought it.
Yeah.
They own it.
But here's my thoughts on growing Instagram and what I've seen with client accounts that we've advised over the years and have done well. Instagram, obviously, is a very visual network.
Right.
So the better your visuals are, the better photography that you have, the better you can figure out how to either take pictures or work the filters or something, or there's apps that you can buy to manipulate your photographs to make them look really great, the better you're going to attract, you know, reactions and shares and so on and so forth. Use the hashtags. Instagram
the hashtags
is very much a hashtag thing. And there are lots of Instagram users who, like, for instance, you know, if you are posting pictures of food or fashion or, you know, sports. Let's take sports, obviously. So if you're posting something, if you're watching a basketball game and you post a picture and you hashtag hoops, hashtag basketball, hashtag, you know, UK, hashtag cats, hashtag KUTs, whatever. Then
hey, how do you spell that? I've never hashtag KUTs.
I use that a lot because I like to make fun of UK fans.
Sure, and we deserve it. I get it.
That's but you hashtag those things, and then there are people on Instagram who will filter and look at posts through those hashtags, and as they if they're scrolling through that filter and they see something that appeals to them, that image, that's where the power of that image comes through.
So it seems like more of it then is finding the new hashtags then a lot of times, because I mean whatever's hot, like I can hashtag BBN all day long. Yep. And that really doesn't help me any. I can hashtag We Are UK. That really doesn't help me any as far as getting new followers, new likes, new hits, new views. But it seems like there's got to be whatever's trending, maybe.
Yeah.
I've got to figure out what's trending along those lines.
Instagram will tell
and then
you
do it.
What's trending. Like, because I'll go in there.
Well,
what's funny is I've probably picked up 150 followers in the last maybe 2 months by tagging with specific to radio. When I put like a section of content from my normal show. Little plug, News Radio 840 WHAS.
Say it slower.
You know, I'll cut these like little promotional videos. I keep them under a minute and I throw them up there.
They're very good, by the way.
It's a 60
a lot of Ken's Burns effect going in and out.
Well,
good.
But
I like
the point is, it's content and it's good content, and you put it out there and you hashtag radio or hashtag mic life.
Right.
You just start
hashtag what?
Mic life.
Mic life. It's in radio. Okay.
But the people that are following now are other people in this business.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Is that what you want?
No.
Exactly.
That's my point. That's why I'm saying this is a great question to ask a social media group.
That's another thing you need to think about. Right.
Who do you want
to follow you?
Right, right.
Like, so if you want people in Lexington, Kentucky or Louisville, Kentucky to follow you, then you need to use
hashtag
Lexington and Louisville location-based hashtags.
Yeah.
If you want people in the bourbon industry to follow you. Like, my Instagram feed is almost all bourbon now.
Yeah,
now, I was very inconsistent for a long time.
I thought when we came in here, you'd be passed out in the chair.
I am.
I'm
multitasking.
You actually take very pretty pictures of bourbon, though.
I do. I do a pretty good job of it. So I'm trying to work up what I'm trying to do.
You're going
to
get a new follower right now.
I was very inconsistent with my Instagram for a long time. I took pictures of my kids. I took pictures of bourbon. I took pictures of sports. And so starting about probably 3 or 4 months ago, I said, no, I'm going to almost singularly devote my Instagram feed to bourbon. And, you know, put together little memes of being funny around bourbon, but then also do my tasting notes when I taste a new one and take pictures when I go to the distilleries and whatnot, because I live in Kentucky, so I have access to them. And so I'm just going to build a nice following. And then maybe down the road one day, I'm going to have enough followers for bourbon brands to say, hey, we want to pay you to, you know, post about us or review our bourbon.
Which for the small business people out there that are or the entrepreneurs or what they're calling gigpreneurs now or the gig economy, if you're interested in that, my understanding on Instagram is you need a minimum of 5,000 followers before anybody will consider to pay you.
Is that true? I think it's actually lower than that.
You think so?
I've actually seen some, and to be honest with you, I sit on the other side of the aisle at an agency now, and I work with several brands, and we try to find influencers. And depending upon your content and who you reach, if we think that you are an influencer in a given area and you reach a certain audience and you only have 2,500 followers, but they're the 2,500 of the right followers, we'll pay you.
Right.
Because if we think we can get in front of the right people by reaching out with you, then we'll absolutely. In fact, I'll give you a really good example. I can't really identify the brand involved, but we have a client that we wanted to get in front of influential people in the Los Angeles market in the sort of food and nightlife industry. And so we identified an influencer on Instagram who has probably 7,000 or 8,000 followers, which to reach the LA market is nothing.
Right.
That's very small.
Yeah. Most of the people doing Instagram in LA are 50, 60, 80,000.
Lots and lots of people. This one was very small, but this particular influencer had a very niche sort of content vertical. And we thought,
mean content vertical?
Let's take food, for instance.
Right.
If it's food, you can talk about food, which is a wide content vertical, or you can talk about desserts, which is a narrow content vertical. Right? Or you could talk about, salads or right? So she had a very narrow content vertical within, the area that we were looking. And so we thought, okay, the influential people in the wide content vertical are paying attention to her because her content vertical is narrow. So we looked, and all of the influential people we really want to reach were following her on Instagram. So we reached out to her and said, hey, we'd like to sponsor some content and work on a partnership with you. We got some pricing, was very reasonable based on her number of followers, a lot cheaper than we're normally dealing with to try to reach the LA market. Right. And so we did some sponsored content with her. And so she posted the content. Those influential people we're trying to reach and get our client in front of are now seeing our client
right.
their feeds.
Fascinating.
So we're influencing the influencers.
So I want to take this, because this, I think, is a good jumping off point into one other area that I wanted to cover, and that was the idea of personal branding, because there's a lot of people, hopefully, that are listening to this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if you own a business. Some of the people listening, we hope, own small businesses and are trying to get bigger. But some of the people listening are just people that work for businesses, but you know, maybe they want a better job,
right.
Or maybe they want to start a business or whatever, and they see social media as a platform to build their brand. I mean, sure. Nowadays, you can't just send your resume out. You got to have a profile on LinkedIn, right. And you got to have, there's a social media presence, and they're going to look through that. So from a personal branding standpoint, maybe categorize, here's the employee, here's the small business startup, and here's the business owner. Mm-hmm. How would those approaches to social media be different for brand building?
You know, I don't know that they would be all that different, because you're building a brand, whether it's a person, a small business, or a large company, you're still building a brand. Where I've had some personal experience that can be worth watching out, if you are an individual and you have a job working for a company, but you're trying to build your personal brand, you need to be very transparent and clear with your employer
right.
what you're doing and why, because those two things are going to come into conflict at some point.
Right.
And so Leland Conway can build the Leland Conway brand over here on the side, but if it starts to conflict with the radio station
right.
and what you're doing over there, then there's going to be a rub at some point.
Right.
And that's going to be tough.
Yeah. If I'm going to hippie festivals on the weekend,
right.
Burning Man and doing all this stuff, but on Monday through Friday, I'm
you're,
over here
you're
the right-wing nut
talking.
Job.
Yeah, yeah.
At some point, people that's are going to start to go, there's some cognitive dissonance there.
Exactly. So,
right.
So you have to be very cognizant and aware of that. The hard part is for the individual who wants to build their personal brand, it takes a while to get to the point to where you can afford to disconnect
yeah.
from an employer or
right.
some other way to make money. So I don't think there's necessarily an inherent difference. You just need to be aware of, you know, what your priorities are as yeah. you move along. You're still going to want to define your target audience, define what value it is you bring to that audience,
yeah.
what channels you need to use to communicate that value to that audience, and then, you know, the messaging you're going to use to deliver that.
Right.
And so that's true across, that's just marketing. That's how you do that across the board.
So bottom line is, more than anything else from what I'm hearing, is social. This matters. It matters more than a lot of people realize, but whatever you're selling, you got to make sure your product is as best as it can be before we even worry about that. Okay, you want to get the word out. You want to tell people what's coming, mm-hmm. but let's make sure the product is worth, I don't know if advertising is the right word, but make sure the product is worth having or worth your community wanting before we really put a lot of push on social media.
Sure. I mean, it's a prioritization. Like, it's a sliding scale. Like, if you... like, for instance, I'll give you a really good, for instance, the folks behind $5 Shave Club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
They inherited or bought or found or whatever a factory full of razors.
Right.
Or a warehouse full of razors. Right. So they didn't necessarily have, in my understanding, the best razors in the world.
Yeah.
They just had a bunch of razors.
Yeah.
So they figured out, okay, well, let's figure out how we could put together some marketing and some messaging to make this work, to sell them, to make money off of them.
Yep.
And they just happened to figure out a way to disrupt a huge market.
Yes.
Right? And
almost a monopoly with only two businesses.
I just want to – is there a bell over there? Can you ring it?
Yes.
Ring the bell, because he just got the disrupt.
It's a long
–
Well,
you ring it, Jason. It took 36 minutes into the podcast, yeah. but we got the disrupt.
No one said you get to keep the bell.
No, he gets to ring it.
All right.
There we go. Okay, so anyway.
Yeah, you need a better disrupt.
So you don't necessarily have to have an insatiable product before you market, before you sell, before you advertise. But in order for you to be ultimately successful, I think, at selling or building a business, that it's going to be easier if your product is insatiable.
Yeah.
Right? Apple – doesn't have to really spend a whole lot of time and energy over here marketing and advertising because they got a great product. You're going to have to spend a lot more energy on this end if you've got a crappy product.
Well, and you know what's interesting to me about $5 Shave Club is that I became aware of them not through social media, unless you count this, through YouTube commercials.
Right.
Their YouTube commercials were brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
And so I had friends, we would pass these around, say, have you seen this? Have you seen this? None of us even thinking about buying their product.
Right.
Until all of a sudden one of us bought the product and said, no, you actually have to try the product.
But their product is an example, going back to Apple, not to get circular here, but in a real sense, they created, talk about disrupting, they created demand where there wasn't really demand. They had a bunch of those razors, and it may not be the best quality, but they also created a whole new niche of razor sellers.
Yeah.
There's the Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah.
There's Harry's.
Harry's, yeah.
Which, because all of a sudden there's this, people are going, yeah, I don't want to have to go to the drugstore.
Here's the thing, though, Leland. I would say there was a demand, but it's almost like we didn't know it. We didn't have any other options.
Right.
So there were no other another option, so there was nothing to demand.
Right.
This is how it is.
They undercut the delivery mechanism and the pricing.
The pricing, definitely.
You know, they basically came in and said, "Here's the price, the product, the promotion." Yep. You know, the
social media was part of how they
said we're going to take one of those and screw it up and disrupt the marketplace. But it's funny that you said, you know, it was YouTube videos. Yeah. I don't even know if it's social media. Well, it was, because you said our friends, we saw this YouTube video and we passed it around.
Yeah,
very
right.
social.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you may have gotten it via email. Yeah,
right.
You may have gotten it via text message.
Right.
In the marketing world, in the digital marketing world, we call email and text message dark social.
Okay.
Right? You're passing messages from and links from friend to friend,
so,
not publicly so everybody sees it, but dark behind the scenes.
Gotcha.
Still social.
So dark social is the reason why Rick Astley, everybody still knows his name.
Absolutely.
Because people were Rickrolling all their friends in email.
I freaking hate that joke. I am telling you what.
God. All right. Nothing. Real quick, as we kind of wrap this up, and we want to give some love to how people can get a hold of you and all of that in just a minute. But
what about your social media?
That's what we're going to do.
But I
want to ask one more thing, because you work in this world. What is the stupidest thing you have ever seen, like a major company or something, do on social media that cost them a lot of money?
Wow.
Hmm. Because we live in a world full of stupid right now.
Yes,
kind of hard to pick one.
A lot of it in this.
Kind of hard
right
to
now.
Pick one. Did you see the Heineken commercial? This wasn't necessarily social media, but social media drove it.
Yeah.
Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Was the one that brought it out. They did it. Heineken did a commercial.
Yeah.
And it was for their light beer.
Heineken Light.
Sometimes lighter is better. And they passed the beer past three African American people and give it to a white lady.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And Heineken had to pull it down because Chance the Rapper was like on Twitter. That wasn't racist at all.
No, no kidding.
You know,
I mean,
golly.
I mean, there's white people that could have figured that one out.
No kidding.
Might be three in this room that did.
I think so.
That didn't make a whole lot of sense to anybody. I can't think of any. I mean, there's been a lot of stupid. Thinking of one right off the top of my head is hard. I'll let you go two. So okay, the one that I've talked about before, it's a little bit before social media, and it's not necessarily a social media case study as it is just a company being stupid.
Right.
But it has parallels to social media, because this was 2003, so it was a little bit before all the social networks came out. So everybody remembers, I know the people, especially here in this part of the country, remember Chi-Chi's restaurant.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, fried ice cream.
So in 2003,
I worked there in college.
They had a hepatitis A outbreak in Pittsburgh, and a couple people died, and a lot of people got sick. And the public was like, oh, what's going on? What are they doing? And the company just decided, well, we're not going to say anything. We're going to, you know, try to figure out what's going on, but we're not going to issue a statement.
Yeah.
We're not going to respond to the media. We're just going to be quiet, which is what a lot of companies think they can do in social media. People start complaining on Twitter and Facebook. We're just going to
let it go.
We're going to let it. It's going to blow over. Don't worry about it. And so Chi-Chi's didn't respond, and the public was outraged. Well, how many Chi-Chi's restaurants are there in America now?
Zero.
There's none.
Zero.
The only Chi-Chi's that exist are, there's somebody bought the licensing for to put the brand name on salsa, and you can buy it in grocery stores places, but there's no restaurants anymore. And the reason there's no restaurants is because they didn't respond to consumers, and consumers were like, "Net, we're done with you."
Yeah.
And the parallel is that when a brand doesn't respond to consumer outrage on social media, then consumers are done with them. They're like, okay, we're done with you. If you don't understand, this is where we are. This is where we're communicating. This is where we expect you to communicate with us.
Chipotle is an example where they responded.
Yeah, exactly.
And it wasn't hepatitis.
And several times. It
seems. But yeah, they're still alive, and I still eat there.
Right.
But this is a great point, though, because the parallel here is there's a difference. Remember, we started off this program talking about how if you're going to take a stand, take one and own it, mm-hmm. versus not saying anything at all.
Right.
There's a difference between saying something stupid, but at least owning it and letting that pass.
Yep.
But if you don't say anything at all, that doesn't pass. Right. Take your stand, own where you stand.
Yeah.
And then it'll pass. But if you don't take a stand when people are demanding something, it won't pass. Does that make sense?
Here's what a lot of CEOs and a lot of business executives and people who make decisions for business don't understand for some reason. If you screw up and say, I screwed up, and I'm sorry, most people go, okay.
Yeah. Listen, this enrages me because how many times do you see, and it's usually PR firms, mm-hmm. it's people that are paid to handle your issues mm-hmm. who tell them, whatever you do, don't admit fault. Don't get up.
Don't
that's why we have so many idiot celebrities get up and say, well, if I offended you, I'm sorry. No.
Feel that way.
Just get up there and say, I screwed up and I'm sorry. Yeah. That's all you have to do and most of it's going to blow over.
Yeah.
God, we're full of idiots.
Well, it's and I would go a step further because I'm in the PR agency world. I don't think it's the PR agency.
I do. It is.
I don't. It's the lawyers.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to get
liability.
They don't want the liability.
Yeah, but you just said. I mean, so basically going up and saying sue for what? Sue for saying something wrong?
Well, but it depends on the situation.
Fault. Okay.
I've been in the room before when the PR person says you need to apologize for doing this.
Okay.
And the lawyer says, absolutely not. Don't say you did it.
See,
that's a litigious.
All right, fine. I will take my anger and I will pull it off PR put it on lawyers where it rightfully belongs.
It's the lawyers.
Golly.
They're used to it. Hate on the lawyers.
Jason Falls.
There's some PR people that deserve it, too.
Don't change, though. My problem is how many times have we seen it in the last 10 years? Celebrities, and it's not just celebrities, it's easy for celebrities because they get up there and they don't know how to handle that. And so they make a problem so much worse by just saying, well, you know, basically putting it back on you. If you're offended, that's on you, man.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly the message
you
want
what?
To convey.
And you know what? There's a lot of hate right now, especially in politics, going around in this country. And a lot of it would dissipate if even the politicians would just say, you know what? I was wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I screwed that up.
Or own a position.
Yeah.
You know, just own a position.
Quit waffling.
Back and forth. Yeah. Well, because how many times would, regardless, if it would be such a rare thing if someone would do that I don't care what side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah, it would
be. If someone would just step up and say, you know what? I didn't have it today. I messed up. I said something I shouldn't have said.
Right.
I didn't mean to say it this way. Just own it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're going to have my respect. And maybe if you get my respect, maybe you get my vote.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to get that.
Can any of the three of us name a politician on either side of the aisle we've ever seen come forward and say, I changed my position on something?
Well, I can think of politicians not by name who have changed their affiliation.
No, I mean somebody that comes forward and says, I was wrong on that policy. I don't think I could.
I know there have been. I can't name them in the specific instance. I know there have been, but
Let's think about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, right?
Right.
Everybody, when we went into Iraq, everyone on both sides of the aisles was for that, for the most part.
Right.
Was for that.
Sure.
Well, whether we did discover or we didn't discover, there's some group of people said we did,
right.
That there was something there. We found it. There were some that said, no, there was nothing there. Nobody has backtracked on either side to say, you know what, we messed that up. There wasn't anything
there. Yeah, there's no official statement that says,
no.
Whoops.
True.
Yeah, there's nothing there. And you know what? And so now, what do we have to do? As people who are against one side or the other, we go back and we find quotes from people that said they were there, but we can't find anything that said, you know what, I was wrong.
What we do is we switch politicians, mm-hmm. and then a lot of times the politician we switch to does the same thing the one that we switched from. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know. So anyway, Jason Falls, how do people get a hold of you?
I'm Jason Falls everywhere, like Twitter, Facebook,
JasonFalls.com.
JasonFalls.com.
Oh.
There's a county manager, city manager in North Carolina who hates me.
Yes.
Because he cannot win a Google search. and he won't send me yard signs when he runs for office. I'm like, hey, send me a yard sign. He's like, fuck off. All right. Thanks. He's Falls Jason on Twitter. He's a good guy. He's a nice guy. Don't pick on him. But I'm Jason Falls everywhere, even .com. So I'm and I got to point this out.
Yes.
There's an awful lot of handsome in this room.
No, yeah. No kidding, man. No kidding. What do you We're proud of ourselves.
What do you think the handsome level would be without the beards, though?
Well, without the beards, it would be significantly less.
Yes.
But here, and I got to point this out because, like, Cameron kind of, he like, there's some awareness about that handsome because he had the whole UK basketball thing, so right. He's got a little bit of a following.
Yes,
you know, 20 years.
I don't know that it's a handsome following, but it's a following.
But he had the people follow you because of the handsome.
Yes, okay,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I was hoping this was going.
There's probably some handsome following too, but
yeah.
But Leland and I kind of sneak up on people.
Right. Yeah, you did. Like, wait a minute, are you saying Hanson following or handsome following?
Probably both.
Because I like the band.
Probably both. I do
Hanson?
Too.
Hanson? Yeah. Love the band.
They're great musicians.
Absolutely they are. And you know what? They've not turned into little weirdos that we thought they would when they were having credit cards at 12 years old.
By the way, if you want to grow your Twitter following, Cameron, from now on, into every post that you put up with hashtag handsome.
Hashtag handsome. Well,
but I will tell you this. There's probably a handsome following of you, too, because I'll admit, there's... Trust me, I am 100% hetero.
Yes.
But you were a couple years younger than me. And I will admit this actually happened several times. I would hear, starting at guard, Cameron Mills. And in the back of my head, that's a pretty man.
Well, let me tell you the problem with that, Jason, is that I only started at guard twice. So only twice did that happen.
Well,
so
you forget.
I came in off the bench many times, but I only started at guard.
You forget. I grew up in Kentucky. I saw you play in high school.
Too. Oh, okay. Fair enough. And by the way, Jason, I will say this is, as what George Costanza say, as a staunch record of unblemished heterosexuality. you're a handsome man, too.
You know what? You know what?
I like it.
You know what? This is the thing, man. When you grow the beard and you earn it and you're not wearing skinny jeans, you can talk like this and you're comfortable with your manhood.
That's right.
All right. Good. Thanks for listening. The Disruption Zone with Jason Falls, Cameron Mills, Leland Conway. When we first got in this room together, we started arguing about beards. You're growing a long beard, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and you have stubble, Cameron.
It's more than
basically
stubble.
What was on top of your head is coming out the bottom now.
That just sounds weird.
Mental floss.
Yes. Well, see, my thing is, I've never done one. I used to go on vacation every year, and you wouldn't shave on vacation.
Right.
Well, at the end of the week, you've got you've got a lot of stubble.
Yeah.
And now I can shape it. And
right.
So I used to do the little thin thing just for fun.
Yes.
And I would keep it for about a day, and I think this just looks stupid. So finally, this last year, over Christmas holiday, I didn't shave for one. I thought, I'm going to actually try one for a while. Nice. Now, I come from – my family comes from southeastern Kentucky where this is a no-no.
Right.
You don't grow beard. This is – everything is supposed to look military in a sense. You get a buzz haircut. You don't grow facial hair. And so my dad has a problem with what I'm doing here.
Right.
But I just – I like it. I've had far too many comments from women.
Are you ever going to actually let it grow, though?
Just as far as I want it, because once it gets further than this, it starts – I don't like it. I tried it.
Okay, I want to make something clear. The whole reason I thought we should bring up beards is because about 2 weeks ago, Cameron and I recorded the first episode of Disruption Zone, and he was making fun of mine.
Okay.
And now he's got one.
Well, first of all, wait a minute. 2 weeks ago, I had this. I've had this for like 3 months now.
Well, why were you making fun of mine?
Well, because yours is just... yours is an attempt.
So the long beard is manly.
Mine is experimental, but yours is an attempt. It's
we have a guest in the room.
Look younger. You're the one started the beard conversation. More magnanimous than anybody. Magnificent.
Cameron, yours looks like an old George Michael with cancer.
Okay.
Like you've got chemo.
The funniest thing about this is that I was going for the George Michael look. So I'm not far from it.
Maybe
I was going for the Don Johnson, George Michael, stubble. Come on. Listen, fashion is cyclical. You know this. It's coming back.
Okay, but one
I am leading the charge.
One other question about beards, though. Have you earned it, like, if you are wearing skinny jeans and a flannel shirt, and then you're suddenly going with the lumberjack beard?
That's
not manly.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. You're just kind of all out there with the T-shirt and the beard, and that's all right.
Now I have a follow-up. Now, we all have some gray in our beards.
Yes.
Okay.
Some?
Did anyone give thought to coloring it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why not?
because this is me.
That is you. Natural. Okay, fair enough. And you?
No,
okay,
never.
All right. I struggled with that for about a week, and then I bought some Just for Men beard. Okay. Have you read the instructions on
bought
that
it.
Stuff? Yeah, I did buy it. Now, I wasn't going to go through with it. I was gonna buy it and say, okay, let's see. Ask some female friends of mine, what do you think? Okay, and then have you read the instructions on that thing?
Yeah.
You've got to do a 48-hour skin test before you know if you're allergic to this stuff. And just because it works time number one, you still have to do the skin test number two. That stuff is dangerous.
We have managed to do an entire